As I said, this song really sums up this ministry. God has been so faithful in this ministry over the years. Are you hearing me okay? And we've had many people oversee this ministry. We're going on our 33rd year here, and we have had many people, but God has been so faithful in sustaining this ministry. And I just want to go over, initially, I want to just talk about the history of this ministry, how this ministry started, because there were some unique men that had a vision to start a ministry for the disabled. This was back in the 70s when churches were not doing this thing. There were very few churches that had disabled ministries back in the 70s. Today, thank the Lord, because of Johnny and Friends and because of the awareness today, a lot of churches are now starting ministries for the disabled people. In fact, Johnny and Friends will go to the church and support them and help them to get it going, which is really exciting. But back in the 70s, this did not happen. But we had some unique men. Sam Britton especially had a vision for this ministry, had a heart for this ministry. Sam, as you know, is a founding member of this church, him and his wife, dear wife, Emery. Sam was a unique man. In fact, I just wanted to share a little bit about Sam. He's retired now, although retirement for him doesn't mean he's not doing anything. He is now goes out to homes and tries to assist and help people who have disabled people, to try to help out, to work through the home and so that wheelchairs can get around in the house. But Sam, at this particular time when we started this ministry, was the professor of kinesiology and director of the Center of Achievement for the Physically Disabled at Cal State Northridge. And here was a man that not only did he have a vision for this ministry, but he also had a vision for a therapy program at Cal State Northridge, something that he thought and prayed about for many years that came to fruition a few years ago. It's called the Abbott and Linda Brown Western Center for Adaptive Therapy. And I would recommend many of you to go out there and visit this. It's at Cal State Northridge. Basically, it's a therapy program for those that are physically disabled. They have programs to help range of motion, to help cardiovascular and muscular strength, and quality of life. It's an amazing, amazing program they have out there. But Dr. Sam Britton, God brought a uniquely gifted man to get this thing started here. But there was other men too. Gene Newman, who's written many books, who's committed his life to the disabled, also was here at that particular time, also to help out. We also had Wayne Fogelsong. Wayne now is the principal of Miller High School, which is probably one of the top disabled schools in the country. It's in the Reseda area, and he's been the principal there for years. And Nick Bright. Those of you remember Nick Bright that was here at Grace. He moved to Oregon some years ago. Nick was also an adaptive PE teacher at Cal State Northridge, and he taught PE to the physically disabled and had committed his life to the disabled. So as you can see, we had some amazing men here to sort of get this ministry started. And God knew that. God knew that we needed some unique people who would train a staff and to come up with some idea. How do you start a disabled ministry? Where do you even begin? So what we did was basically these men started a Sunday school class here on Sunday mornings. Initially, there were just a couple people that came. Well, 33 years now, as we look back, we have two Sunday school classes on Sunday mornings. We have one at 8:30 and one at 10:30. The 8:30 class is a little smaller, but it's for those disabled people who have parents that go here, majority of the people that go to that first hour. The second hour at 10:30 are for those that we pick up. We go and pick up about 11 to 12 of the mentally disabled in a van. We have vans here. And we also pick up, we have this bus out here, if you've ever noticed this huge thing that's out here in the back. We pick up physically disabled. Some of them come to our Sunday school class also. It's amazing, amazing ministry. And what's been really special for me coming into this ministry with no experience, to be able to work with people that have been here for years, because the supervisors for our Sunday school classes have been here for over 25 years. One gal, the first hour, her name's Wendy Hidalgo. She started serving here when she was 18. She's been married. She's had kids. And through all this, she has been faithfully serving. Her husband obviously married her and joined with her. So she does the first hour of Sunday school class. The second hour is Peter Kuzmitz. Peter has been doing it also for 25 years. And he has a dear son, David, who's mentally disabled. So the Lord has really, really blessed this ministry with people who are experienced, who know what they're doing, have been there and done that. And that really helped me coming into this ministry with no experience. And to be able to sit underneath them and to learn has been a real blessing. So we started the Sunday school class. And after that, after the Sunday school class, we started a Tuesday night outreach called Grace Club. That's been going on for over 25 years. It's called Grace Club. Wayne Fogelsong came up with the idea. What it is, it's an outreach. We have about 140, if they all show up on a Tuesday night, that come here. These are mentally disabled, those that have autism, those that have Down syndrome. They come here on a Tuesday night. We meet in the gym for a half hour. We have do physical activities. We do some a little light jogging around the gym. Very simple activities that are geared for them. Then we go down to the basement for another 45 minutes until we go to about till about 8:30. And we have a large, it's like a large Sunday school class, basically. We teach the Bible. We do prayer time. We have a worship time. You should be there to hear 140 disabled people singing. It's a great, great blessing to hear them sing. Your heart is blessed. Your heart is blessed. And what's really exciting, though, about this ministry is not only are we ministering to these mentally disabled people, but the care providers who bring them come also. So we have maybe 30 care providers that are there that sit in the back. Many of them don't know the Lord. In fact, probably most don't. And we also have some family members that come. So that's a great opportunity not only to minister to these physically disabled people, mentally disabled people, but also to their families and to the people that take care of them. And what's really exciting, a couple of years ago, a lady came up to me that had been serving, coming on Tuesday nights for years, and she told me she got saved from sitting in the back, seeing what we were doing. And that would just bless my heart. So it's an amazing ministry. You're welcome to come and visit sometime on a Tuesday night if you want to see what we do. So we had our Sunday school class. Then we had the Grace Club. Then we started our camps. And we felt, hey, let's take them somewhere, the ones that are able to go. So for years, we've been taking them to all parts of California, to Yosemite, Descanso Gardens. We've taken them to down to San Diego, Mount Palomar. We've taken them to Santa Cruz, San Francisco. And the basic goal of this camp is to teach them about God's creation. And that's basically our theme every year, is God's creation. This is what God has created. And you can know this God. We keep it real simple. But we've had many lives changed from these camps. Funny story that I want to share. I know Rick Moberg's in the back, and he can remember this story. My first night serving in this ministry as pastor was at a camp in Palomar. And in these camps, we sleep in the tents with them. We have to be in there with them. So I was in the tent with a couple guys. First night, the guy sleeping right next to me went to the bathroom all over the tent. Everywhere, all over the tent. It was, and those of you know, the smell was enough to kill me. But the Lord challenged me that night that this is the kind of ministry that you're in. Are you willing to serve in this kind of ministry? Now, I have to confess, Rick bailed me out that day because the next day he helped clean up the mess. I didn't. I have to admit, I'm not good at those things. But the Lord was just testing me. He wanted me to see if I'm really in this or not for the long haul. And so I'll never forget that. But this is part of our camps. That's just part of the camps. Okay, so we've had our Sunday school class. We've had Grace Club, Project Genesis. Then some special person came to this church back in 1979 that really put us on the map. And that was Johnny Erickson. She came here to film her movie, the Johnny movie. And then by the encouraging of Sam Britton, she decided to attend this church. And she was such an encouragement to this ministry. From what I've talked to people who shared to me that she put us on the map. She made people aware of the fact that we had a ministry here. And our ministry began to grow because of her. Then in 1984, another special person came here, Stan Carter. Stan, those of you who knew Stan, is an amazing, amazing man. I can remember Stan walking across the campus going 100 miles an hour. That's how I remember Stan Carter. He was everywhere at all times. In fact, sometimes I would come up to Stan and say, "Are you sure you don't have a twin?" He was everywhere. The guy did everything here. But he had a heart for the disabled. He had a son who had Down syndrome son, and he loved the disabled. And basically, he brought an excitement to this ministry, an enthusiasm. And we grew a lot with him here for the many years that he was here. In 1987, a unique lady came to this church and had a heart for the disabled. And she came up with the idea of having some activities on Saturdays for the physically disabled. Maybe taking them to the parks, taking them to Disconsolate Gardens, and also doing theme parties. This lady's name was Karen Jones. Now she's Karen Boyard. And she had a heart. She loved to put together parties. This was her gift. This was her thing, to put together parties. And she's been doing this for over 20 years. And we have, these are on Saturdays. We have these. And again, it's an opportunity to get to know them better and also to share the gospel to them. Because every party that we've ever done here, we always share the gospel at the end of the party. We have somebody get up and share the word and share the gospel message. But Karen was uniquely gifted putting together theme parties. She has done every imaginable theme party you could think of over the years. And she will decorate the 130 room into another world. It's just amazing how gifted she is. And we're going to miss her. She's stepping down this year. We're praying that God will keep this ministry going, that God will bring a uniquely gifted person who could keep this ministry going. It's called Grace on Wheels. She named it Grace on Wheels. And it's a great, great opportunity to love and get to know these people. So pray for us there. We're looking for someone to replace her, which is difficult. It's like replacing John MacArthur. She's irreplaceable, but we're hoping that God will be able to find somebody to replace her. Now, I'd like to just talk about some difficulties. Well, before I do that, though, let me talk about the definition real quickly. And I'm not trying to insult your intelligence here, but I'd like to define what is a disability and what is handicap. And the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, defines a disability as a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more of the major activities of an individual. What do we mean by major activities? Our speech, our hearing, our walking, breathing, seeing, things that we can all hear take for granted, right? We take these for granted. And this is obviously going to have a major impact on their lives. Major impact on their lives. As far as their social and recreational activities, employment, it affects everything. And according to the National Organization of Disability, there are 49 million people in the U.S. who have a disability of some sort. Now, I'd like to define a handicap. When I grew up, I always thought a person in a wheelchair was called handicapped. I felt this is a handicapped person. Now, obviously, we live in this politically correct world where they want to redefine terms. A lot of people like to say that they are physically challenged or mentally challenged. But I want to explain about handicap. What does that really word mean, handicap? Handicap is an encumbrance in society or the environment that makes success more difficult to achieve. For example, for you and I to get up and down stairs, it's easy. To go up and down hills, it's easy. To get transportation, we can drive, most of us. For a disabled person, this is a challenge. This is a real challenge for them. Not only that, but they also need people to take care of them. And sometimes they find people that don't do a very good job in taking care of them. That can be a handicap. So we see here all the outside influences of a person with a disability are the handicaps and how they deal with those outside activities. Those are the handicaps. Those are the difficulties that they have to deal with every day. Every day. It's a challenge for them. Okay. I would like to share some truths again, about the disabled people that we have in our notes here. Things that might sound simple to all of us, but these are kind of attitudes that people have, especially people that don't understand the disabled. They just haven't had a chance to work with them. First here in our notes we have on A is having a disability does not mean that you're sick. Does not mean that you're sick. What do I mean by that? What do I mean by that? Well, Johnny Erickson once stated, a man came up to her and sat next to her, patted her on the knee and said, Johnny, it must be very difficult to be sick like you are. Well, Johnny responded by saying, sir, being in a wheelchair does not make you sick. Just because a person has a functional limitation does not mean that he or she is sick or diseased. Cerebral palsy is not a disease. It is any of several disorders of the nervous system. A broken neck or back is not an illness. It's injury to the spinal cord. Polio is not a sickness. It's a handicapping condition that results from a virus. So, yes, some disabilities are accompanied by health problems, but for the most part, disabilities are simply conditions or impairments. Be here. Having a disability does not mean that you have all the other disabilities. This is something that I had to learn. When I first met Randy Horton, those of you that know Randy Horton, he's been going here for years. He has cerebral palsy. He has a severe case of cerebral palsy. First time I met Randy, I assumed that he had nothing upstairs. He just didn't. So I didn't even try to talk to him. I just stood there. I didn't know what to say to him, to be honest. I figured that he wouldn't understand a word I said and that he was mentally gone. Johnny states that when she goes to the market with her aide, Judy Butler, the clerks will always go to Judy. They'll never talk to Johnny because they think that there's nothing there mentally. So we have to be careful not to assume that one disability means they have all the other disabilities, that they're hard of hearing, they can't see, or they're mentally gone. And those with mental disabilities, it's interesting. I notice when people come up to our mentally disabled people, sometimes they want to speak loudly in their ear. They think they're deaf. They just assume that they're deaf, and they'll start yelling in their ear and talking real slowly. I think we've all done this at times. See here, having a disability does not mean that you don't have any faith. This is something that Johnny had to experience when she first broke her neck. She had so many people coming up to her and saying, Johnny, if you just had faith, God would heal you. You wouldn't be in a chair anymore. Johnny would say, you know, I appreciate your concern for me, and I'd be the first to dance for joy if I could get out of this chair, but the key is, she says here, that you make a critical mistake here when you assume that my condition is dependent upon what? My faith. She says, my condition is dependent on what? God's sovereignty. It's a hard one for all of us to stomach when we see someone in a wheelchair, but it is purely God's sovereignty that allows those things to happen. Purely His sovereignty. Barbara Walters one time interviewed Christopher Reeve. Remember Christopher Reeve, who broke his neck? He was on a horse and he fell down. And here's a man that was not a believer as far as we know. But even he said that there had to be a purpose for what happened to him. There had to be some kind of purpose. And if he can believe that there had to be a purpose, then we, those who are believers, know that we have a personal God and designer who does have a purpose for everything He does. And the Bible says much about this. Obviously, we know Romans 8:28. For God works together all things for good. And it's hard for us to understand that when we see someone who's in a chair who is suffering. Ephesians 1:11 also says that in Him we were also chosen according to His plan, who works everything in conformity with His purpose or will. God, according to His will, works everything, good or bad, according for His purposes. And He always has good in mind for this. He always has good in mind for this. Over the years, I have seen a lot of good in people who have had disabilities, who've had terrible tragedies. They draw near to the Lord. They learn to be patient. They learn to be content. They learn to depend on the Lord. They learn to get their strength from who? From Him. They learn to live on His grace. His grace is sufficient. They learn to really experience those verses that we have studied here in the Word of God. God says, my strength is sufficient. My grace is sufficient for you. So God doesn't make mistakes. He does not make mistakes. Number D here. Having a disability does not mean that your disability was caused because of your sin. Back in the time of Christ, the Jews felt that someone that was in a wheelchair, it was because of their sins. They had done something to offend God, and God was punishing them. And we know that's not true. Now, we do know there are consequences of sin, right? There are consequences. We know people who go out drunk driving, get in a car accident, and then they're paralyzed for the rest of their life. There are consequences to sins. Yes, there are. But God does not punish someone and say, you're going to be disabled. Lastly here, E, having a disability does not mean that you get a free ticket to heaven. People with disabilities, like all people, are morally and spiritually accountable and will stand before God, the judge, someday, and they have to answer for their choices that they made in life. Did they respond to the gospel? Are they going to respond to God's grace? And God will not say in that day when they stand before him, you poor person, you have suffered so much on earth. Now you can come into heaven on the basis that I owe you one. God doesn't work that way. They are responsible before the Lord. And the sad thing is that they do suffer in this life. But after they die, it's going to be worse if they don't commit their lives to Christ. And the reason I'm sharing this here is it's a strong reminder to all of us that we need to share the gospel to these people, to this forgotten field. They need to hear the gospel. And a lot of that starts with developing a friendship with them. And that's kind of what we do here. We try to develop a relationship with them, get to know them, with the hope of sharing Christ to them so they'll come to know the Lord. And sometimes it is a slow process as you work with them. It's a slow process. You have to be patient. We don't know the age of accountability. I know many people come up to me and say, why are you teaching these people? They don't understand the gospel. They don't understand it. Why are you teaching them? We don't know the age of accountability. In our Sunday school classes, we do have some that maybe have the mentality of a 2 or 3 year old. We don't know. And we're not going to worry about that. We just want to be faithful to give them the truth in love and let God work out the rest. Let God work out to the rest. If we were to summarize these principles into one major theme, is we must think and treat a person with a disability as if he or she were just like us. They were just like us. They need the Lord. They need love. They need encouragement. They need to be challenged. They need to be disciplined, just like anyone else. Remember, though, the essence of a person, their capacity to think and feel and choose are affected by their disability, but not eliminated. They're still a whole person, and they need us to love them and reach out to them. They need to hear the gospel. That is so important, essentially important in this ministry. Okay, I'd like to just share some difficulties that the disabled community must face. If you ever want to read a good book, Johnny has a good book called Barrier-Free Relationships. It's a very simple book, and most of this is coming from that. She shares, not only from her personal experience, from just being around other disabled people, the struggles that they have to go through every day. I think it's important that we understand this. A lot of it's basic stuff here, but every life day in their life is a challenge. The difficulties that are mostly affected, though, is their employment, their family life, housing, transportation, medical needs, and friendship. So those issues I'm just going to touch on briefly here. First, employment. 63% of the people in our country who are disabled are unemployed. And disabilities, and these are people that could possibly work. Mentally, they're capable of working. But 60% of the people in our country are unemployed, disabilities. And some countries don't hire at all, 100%. There are some countries that refuse to hire a disabled person. The thing is, they want to work. Why is that important for them to work? Because they want to be productive in our society, just like we do. They want to be a part of the society. They want to be productive like all of us do. And they want to have economic freedom to be able to choose things in their life, things that they can do. And so with them not working, there's a stigma. If you don't have a job, there is a tremendous stigma on these people, and they want to work. Secondly, the family life. Family life. There is tremendous strain on the family, enormous strain that's put on the family. Physical strength can be drained of energy for caring for a disabled person. That's a 24/7 job. The sheer weight of loss of dreams, affections, income, relationships can crush the structure of the family. What is cried out? A husband tells her wife, who's taking care of a disabled child, you never spend time with me anymore. A wife telling her disabled friend, I'm your nurse, I'm not your nurse, I am your wife. A couple who has a young boy says, we can never take a vacation because of Billy. Or we can never go out with other couples to fellowship because they have to take care of a disabled child. The strain, in fact, becomes so much to bear that the divorce rate takes off. The divorce rate is over 80% for those who have a disabled child. And the disabled child feels guilty because they feel responsible for causing the divorce. So there's tremendous shame and guilt there. And they blame themselves, as I said. Or a disabled spouse who's married to the husband or a wife, they feel guilty because of the amount of stress they put on their mate. And I can tell you from personal experience, there are two young ladies here that go to our church who are disabled. Both of them lost their husbands. The husbands left them with children. They had one girl has two children. She's here, and her husband left her. She got in a car accident. She ended up in a wheelchair. She can't speak. She can speak, just you have to listen to her quietly. And her husband left her. Left her with the children. We hear this all the time. It just grieves our hearts. So we see the strain on employment, family. Housing can be difficult. Especially one who lives in a wheelchair. You can't live in a normal house with a wheelchair. There has to be changes in the house. And those that are severely disabled have to have someone to live with them and take care of them. Now we have group homes all around the valley here that are a blessing, that take care of many of these disabled people because the families just can't do it. But it is a challenge to find housing that's affordable, and suitable housing is a major problem. Transportation is a problem. Getting around, they need to go to doctors all the time. Coming to church here can be a challenge. Now, there is a public transportation system here that we have now access. They're okay. They're not perfect. They help, but sometimes they are late. As you know, we have people here, even on Sundays, where access will be an hour and a half late. Or sometimes they never do show up. So transportation is a real problem. Medical issues are another problem. They can be very worrisome. When you become disabled, you enter into a club where your body becomes more expensive than a house. Johnny Erickson stated once that in the 40 years that she's been disabled, that she has probably spent over 43,000 hours in the hospital for bed sores, thousands and thousands of dollars in medical expenses, 262,000 hours going through daily care routines. And these medical issues absorb time, energy, money that would otherwise be invested into friendships and relationships. Friendships is a real problem. And this is one thing I wanted to touch on for a few minutes. They deeply desire to have friends. They want to be accepted and they want to have friends. There was a poll taken a few years ago that says that 57% of people without disabilities feel uncomfortable around those that have disabilities. Why? They're uncomfortable around the way they talk, their movement, the way they act. They don't know what to say. Disabled people tend to have different facial features. They're different. They're different. And people feel very uncomfortable around them. In fact, they fear. There's a fear that's there. They're afraid. I know I was afraid. I will be honest with you. When I came into this ministry, I was scared to death. I didn't know anything about it. I was uneducated. And I remember my first night in Grace Club when I had 140 mentally disabled running around the gym. And now I'm the pastor of these people. It was a real challenge for me. It was a real challenge for me for a while. But many are afraid. And there's a certain research that was done some years ago that states that people are afraid to be around disabled people because they're afraid they're going to catch the disability. They're afraid that they're going to catch it, which isn't possible. But just as you know, so again, these things happen. And a lot of it is education. A lot of it is education, just understanding. Johnny Erickson stated once that, how would you feel if you created discomfort or fear in people when you're initiating friendships? How would you feel if you were sitting in the laundromat and someone was looking for an excuse to get away from you as quick as possible? Or if they might assume that they might talk to you for a little while, but you could tell that they really wanted to be somewhere else. So it is a challenge. And friendships is a key. They deeply desire to have friendships. And it's a great opportunity to get to know them. And I'll talk a little bit later about the challenges, though. There are some challenges there. All right, let's talk about the reasons why we do what we do here. Why do we do this ministry? Why do we do this? Well, five things I want to touch on here. Five reasons why we do this ministry. Number one, A, Christ loved and cared for the disabled. Christ sets the example. In fact, of the 34 miracles that Christ performed in the Bible, 25 of them were to someone who was physically or mentally disabled. Of course, what did he do? He healed them. He basically healed them. But I'd like to turn to Mark 5 just quickly. Mark 5, there's one incident that really describes what a disabled person goes through. Mark 5, verse 25. Mark 5, verse 25. Now, this woman is not physically or mentally disabled, but this story really describes what a disabled person has to go through. Mark 5, verse 25. Here's a woman, we'll read verse 25, who had a hemorrhage for 12 years. This woman had been bleeding consistently for 12 years. Well, this causes problems at this particular time. A woman that was bleeding like this was deemed unclean, and she was a cast-off. People did not want to be around her. Family and friends rejected her. Loved ones. Verse 26 says she had endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. This woman spent all she had on doctors to try to help her. They couldn't find out what the problem was. In fact, Luke 8:43 states that no one could heal her. She was broke, she was lonely, and unloved. This describes our disabled community. In many cases, this woman was broke, unloved, and she was crying out. And here Christ, picture this, Christ is walking with multitudes following him around. In fact, if we go back to verse 21, it says here, when Jesus had crossed over in the boat to the other side, a large crowd had gathered around him and stayed with him by the seashore. So here's Christ with this large crowd following him. And this woman comes up. Let's read verse 27. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. This woman just comes up from behind him. So desperate. Verse 28 says, for she thought, if I touch his garments, I will get well. If I just touch his garments, I will get well. What happened? In verse 29, it says, immediately the flow of blood was dried up and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. This is amazing. But what's even more amazing, though, as we look at Christ's reaction here, this is what I really want to focus in on. In verse 30, immediately Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? Now Christ, he knew what was going on here. He knew about this woman. He knew she had come up behind him. He wasn't ignorant about this. He just wanted to turn around and see how this amazing woman. He wanted to make sure that he acknowledged her face to face and looked at her. Verse 32, it says, verse 31, he says, and the disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, who touched me? Verse 32, and he looked around to see this woman who had done this. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. Christ wanted to make sure that this woman had some time to share her grief to him. Here's a woman that had lived a difficult life for 12 years. And Christ wanted to acknowledge that and give her time to grieve with him so he could hear it and have compassion. But verse 24 really sums up the attitude of Christ. It says here, and he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. He calls her daughter, a term of love and affection. Christ had tremendous love and affection for this poor woman who had been a cast off in society. This is the heart that Christ wants us to have towards the disabled, to have that kind of compassion on them, to care, spend time with them, listen to them. Listening is a tremendous blessing for those that have a disability, to just sit and listen to them and let them talk. Number two here, in our five reasons why we do this ministry, we are commanded to reach out to the disabled. B, we are commanded to reach out to these people. I just want to read a couple of verses real quick. First, James 1:27. I know Jim taught in James a while back. James 1:27. James 1:27. It says here, pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in distress. Orphans and widows. Who are these people? Who do they represent, orphans and widows? These are the people who are needy, the needy people of the church. These are people who struggle with distress. These are people who are lonely and are exploited in our society. And because of the article, the way these words are used in this verse, this refers to anybody in the church who characterizes the struggles that an orphan and widow go through. And this would obviously be related to those with disabilities. James is saying that if you want to be a doer of the word, in this particular section of James, he's talking about being a doer of the word. He says if you want to be a doer of the word, then reach out to these special people. Reach out to them. Let's quickly turn to Matthew. Matthew 25. Christ is talking about the sheep and the goats here. And he talks about the characteristic that a sheep should have, a believer. He says, if you want to follow me, this is the kind of attitude you need to have. We're going to read first here at verse 34. Matthew 25, verse 34. He says, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you, for the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Let's go down to verse 40. The king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you have done it unto me. Christ is saying that if you're a believer, you should have a heart for people who are hurting. You should have a heart for people who are hurting. All right, number three here on C. We are also to bring them the good news of salvation. They need to hear the good news of salvation like anyone else. Mark 16:15 says, go into the world and preach the gospel to what? Some of the creation? All of the creation. And that includes those with disabilities. They need to hear the gospel. And you notice when Christ would heal people, in his ministry, he was always concerned about where they were with him. He wanted to make sure they knew who he was. He was concerned about their salvation. And we need to be concerned also for these people and their salvation. All right, D here. Those with disabilities are an indispensable part of our church. They are an indispensable part of our church. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 12. Verse 22, 1 Corinthians 12. Paul is talking about the body of Christ and the different gifts that we have in this section, challenging them that everyone has a gift and should serve. And then in verse 22, he says, a profound statement here. He says, on the contrary, it is much true that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which deem less honorable on those we bestow more abundant honor, and our less presentable members become much more presentable. Paul is saying much here. He's saying those people, those are the hurting people, the section, those people in our church that are the ones that are not noticed much, the ugly ones, the ones that we don't like to be around, they're an important part of this church. They want to serve. Number one, we need to make sure that they have opportunities to serve in this church. I am so blessed when we have our Shepherd's Conference to see Hillary serving and many of our people here, the disabled people, serve. I am blessed to see that. They want to serve. They need to use their gifts just like we do in this church. And also, they're a blessing for us also in this church because they teach us a lot. We can learn much from them in this church by by ministering to these dear people. And I'll explain in a minute about that more specifically. They're an indispensable part of our church. We are blessed to have them here, is what I'm trying to say here. We are blessed to have them here. And we won't need to come alongside and encourage them to serve and encourage them to grow in the Lord. Lastly here, E here, is that we benefit from serving the disabled. We benefit much from this. What do we benefit from? What do we learn from serving these people? Well, from my experience, we can learn from patience. The Lord has taught me much patience in this ministry. You have to slow yourself down to be with these people. There's no way around it. You have to slow yourself down. You have to talk slower. You have to learn to listen slower. If you're going to spend a day with a disabled person, you better to learn some patience. You better learn some patience, which is good for us. This is good for us. It teaches us to slow down. We are going so fast in this society. We also learn about God's grace in their lives. We see how God takes care of these people. God loves them. We see how God loves and sustains the what? The weak. We have firsthand knowledge of seeing that happen with these special people. He cares for these people, and he wants us to care for them. We are stretched. If you want to be a friend of someone who has a disability, you are going to be stretched. But it's a great opportunity to learn and love and care for someone that you don't understand a lot about. You have to learn. And you have to learn to trust God with them. And you're going to touch horizons that you've never touched before. You're going to be taking places that you've never been before. You're going to have to cope with new problems. But you know what? It's good. It's good because what it does, it causes us to learn to what? Trust the Lord. Trust the Lord. God is so faithful with these people. Another aspect that we learn is learning to selflessly serve someone. Learning to selflessly serve someone. You know, the Bible talks much about the one another's. In fact, there's 31 verses in the New Testament alone that talk about the one another's. And if you want to learn how to flesh out the one another's, learn and develop a friendship with someone who's disabled. I want to share a quick story. I'm not going to name this lady. There was a lady that had called me a few years ago that was struggling with depression. And her husband had died and she was really struggling. And I said, well, why don't you come on a Tuesday night and help us with our mentally disabled people? And what I was thinking was this would be a great opportunity for what? To get her mind off her what? Herself. She came down on a Tuesday night and she's been with us now for 5 or 6 years. Faithful servant. And I've seen her grow in leaps and bounds since the first time I met her. So this is a great opportunity to learn to what? To die to self. Because when you're around these people, it's not about you anymore. It's not about you. It's about serving someone that has needs. That is good for us. This is good for us. Very good. And that's why God has me in this ministry, because God knows how selfish I am. Lord picked the right guy in that respect, being in this ministry. And I've had to learn to get my eyes off myself. And that's a good thing. So there's tremendous, tremendous benefits. Boy, we're running out of time here. I was going to leave some time for questions. One or two questions, and that's about all the time we got, because we have a special announcement that we want to make. Dave Golden's going to come up here in a minute and make a special announcement. Any questions at all that you have at all? That must have meant either I did a good job in covering everything or... Okay, well, if you have any questions, you're welcome to come up to me afterwards. We would love to, if the Lord has prompted your heart to serve in this ministry, we'd love to have you involved. You're welcome to come and talk to me, or you can even come and visit and see what we do.